we're finishing up lesson 10, the review questions. We made it part of the way through. A lot to talk about, and kind of an unfortunate break between lesson 10 and 11, because it kind of stops partway through John chapter 6, and we're going to pick up with John chapter 6 in lesson number 11. And it's those things that we've studied at the end of this portion of the life of Christ that directly lead into that. There's so many things that we need to learn about as we turn our attention. We talked about last week the need as Jesus walked on the water towards the disciples in the midst of the storm, and how that Peter wanted to go out to meet him, and Jesus simply said to Peter, come, and he came. But we pointed out how that when he turned his attention from the Lord, that he began to see his circumstances and his surroundings, and how frightening they were, that he began to sink. And Jesus reached out and saved him. But we've talked about the need, as we read in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, the need for us to fix our eyes on Jesus, to keep looking at him. And hopefully through opportunities such as this, as we study the life of Christ, not only during this hour of study, but as we read and study the Gospels, that we fix our eyes on him, that we learn from him, we dedicate ourselves to what he came to do. So let's go ahead and proceed with the questions. We're going to pick it up with number 10. There are, I believe, about three more copies up here that Lisa made a few more. So, number 10, and it's, I hate to pick this up midstream, but here we go. We're talking about the healing of Jairus' daughter and the invalid woman. And question number 10 asks, what were the people at the house of Jairus doing when Jesus arrived?
They were in full mourning.
Full mourning, and how did Jesus describe the scene, as it were? Yeah, it was chaos, it was disorder, it was a noisy situation, and he saw the flute players, he saw the crowd, the noisy disorder, and then asked, why make a commotion and weep? He asked them, why are you making this commotion? So that's how I answered last, how did he respond? But there was one other part to Jesus' response to their disorder and their weeping and the chaos that was going on. After he asked, why make a commotion and weep, what did he tell them?
She's asleep.
Yeah. She has not died, but she is asleep. So that was the response. When Jesus raised the daughter of Jairus from the dead, why do you think he only allowed three of his disciples and the parents of the girls in the room where he performed the miracle? Long question. And if we're going strictly by the scriptures, what's the answer to that question?
We don't know.
We don't know. Oftentimes, what did Jesus tell those that he performed the miracles on?
Go and tell the one. Sometimes he said, go and tell.
Oftentimes he said, don't go and tell anybody. Sometimes says the demonic that he cast out into the herd of swine, he said, hey, go tell your people. But in this particular situation, why did he only bring in the disciples? We don't know. But what do we do know about why did Jesus perform miracles? Was it to put on a show? Was it to have a great audience and to bring attention to himself?
No.
It was not. So we don't know the answer to that question, absolutely, but we know that oftentimes the purpose was to offer evidence for the faith of those that he performed the miracle on. And we'll leave that at that point. We next studied the healing of a blind man. What was the request of the two blind men towards Jesus? What did they ask him? How did they phrase it? have mercy on us. And they said, have mercy on us. And what title did they give to David? What title did they give to Jesus?
Son of David.
And which is a messianic term for the Christ. So said, have mercy on us, Son of David.
What was Jesus' response? What did he counter
after they asked for his mercy? Do you believe I can do this? And we make the point that is it necessary to have faith on the part of the recipient to do a miracle? Not necessarily, but in some circumstances such as this, Jesus wanted to make the point and to ask them, do you believe who I am? It's not just the power, but it's who I am. Do you believe I am able to do this? That word able is the Greek word what? Where we get the word dynamite. Dunamis. Do I have the power to do this? And what did they say?
Yes.
Yes, Lord. They sure did.
And what did they do after Jesus had healed them? Again, what did Jesus tell these two blind men?
He said no one knows it.
Yeah. This is just, it's just between us. But what did they do? They went out and told everyone.
Could you not tell everyone?
Could that not be determined by seeing these fellows that could not be seen or could not see? And now they have their sight restored. I mean, it's kind of hard to keep that quiet.
It'd be hard to not notice, but the aspect also is, how did that come to happen?
Yeah. It's the why and it's the how. And it's interesting that when we talk about spreading the good news, that how often Jesus had told individuals, don't tell anybody the good news, and they could not but tell the good news. Their excitement and joy over what had happened. Number 13, what was the response of the multitudes when Jesus healed a man who was both mute and demon-possessed? I'm sorry? They were amazed and said, we have never seen anything like this before. What was the response of the Pharisees?
Cast out demons by Beelzebub.
Yeah. Discrediting as they had done before. You must be doing this by the power of Beelzebub. Number 14. What prophecy did Jesus read in the synagogue? Who has that? I'm sorry? It's Isaiah, absolutely. You know the chapter? Chapter 61, verse 1. And who has that? Who can read that real quick?
From Isaiah or from?
From Isaiah, yes.
Isaiah 61.
Yeah. Isaiah 61, verse 1. Yeah, that's it.
The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good tidings to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to those who are bound.
And Jesus applied that to who?
Himself.
That's me. I'm the one who's been sent here to preach freedom to the captives, to provide the hope. He applied it to himself. Number 15, even though Jesus manifested great wisdom in his teachings, what questions
did his own countrymen ask of him, and why? Well, right. What was said about Jesus among his own countrymen?
Isn't this the carpenter's son, and aren't his brothers and sisters with him?
Right. He's the boy we saw grow up before. He's just Jesus of Nazareth.
I think it's interesting to note that in one of them, I forget which one it was, they say, "Isn't this the carpenter?"
Right.
And so, and the others, it says, "Is this the carpenter's son?" So it's interesting to note then that Jesus was the carpenter.
And we eat dinner off the table he made, you know. All right. So he was known as the carpenter's son. Oftentimes in Jewish society, you did what your father did. And that was very, very common.
It's interesting, the first couple questions before they said the statement, "Is this not the carpenter's son?" Because they're asking, where does he get these works?
Yeah.
This is Joseph's son.
This is not reconciling.
Mary's son.
Right.
We know him. Where did he get these things?
There's a disconnect for them, isn't it?
Yeah.
But what was said about Jesus and the respect and honor he received amongst his own people? That those who knew him best were those who honored him the least and would not recognize. And the next question, number 16, why is it that Jesus could do no mighty work in his own country? Was he, did that dunamis power leave him when he was amongst his own people? No, but he didn't do the miracles among them. Why? Because of their unbelief, absolutely. That he knew their unbelief. He knew their hard heart. He knew that he could have performed any miracle among them. They wouldn't have believed. And so, he wasn't going to do any work among them because of their hardness of heart and their unbelief. Number 17, what did the people of Nazareth want to do to Jesus?
Kill him.
They wanted to kill him, and they were literally going to do what to him? They had him up on the pinnacle of the mount here in Jerusalem there, and they were going to push him off the cliff.
Is it
Nazareth? Okay, thank you. And they were going to push him off. What kept them from doing it?
Because Jesus passed through them.
He passed through them. And it's an interesting expression as we read, you know, from that passage a week or two ago, I think, at home. Was it miraculous that he just kind of just, I don't know. But we thought it's kind of amazing that they could be so focused on him and wanting to kill him, and somehow he just slips through the midst. But the ultimate reason why Jesus came to die, didn't he, for our sins? But why not now?
It wasn't time.
Number 18. When Jesus saw the multitude scattered abroad as sheep without a shepherd, what did he say to his disciples? How did he describe the multitude?
Eve? I was just told that their workers are.
I'm sorry?
A harvest is full. It's plentiful, but the workers are few.
Yeah, there's not enough work. I mean, there's not enough workers. There's too much work. How did he see the people? What was their condition? How did he describe that?
Scattered sheep
without a shepherd. And he described them as being distressed, as dispirited, and as Richard pointed out, like sheep without a shepherd. And what was his reaction to seeing their lost condition? He had compassion for them. Sometimes we see the lost in this world, and We have to ask ourselves, do we have the compassion for the loss that Jesus also had? And then, as he pointed out, he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, the workers are few. There's more work to be done with these lost sheep that need so much direction. They need teaching. They need guidance. And we make the point that his compassion drove him to teach the people. When he saw that they lacked direction, he's like, I've got to teach them. I've got to give them some direction, some leadership. I've got to tell them what they need to know. Number 19. Where did Jesus send his disciples? This is, we're talking now about what we call the limited commission.
The house of Israel.
Okay. He sent them to the house of Israel. That's where they were to start. To the lost sheep of the house of Israel, carrying on with that theme of sheep without a shepherd. What was their purpose in going? What were they to do? What were some of the things that Jesus talked about? Here's my charge to you.
Preach the kingdom of God and heal the sick.
Preach the kingdom and heal the sick. The healing the sick was to confirm the message. Here's the message. What were they to take with them? Nothing. They were to trust God for their provisions. What were they to do when they went to a village or a city and people didn't receive them? Shake the dust off their feet and move on. What were some of the dangers that he warned them would happen as they went out preaching the kingdom? It's going to be dangerous. And you need to be shrewd. You need to be innocent. What were some specifically the things that Jesus told them were going to happen to them? They were going to be persecuted. And he got very specific about that persecution. They're going to hand you over to the courts. They're going to do what to you physically?
Synagogue. Scourge.
They're going to scourge you. And you're going to be brought before governors and kings for my sake. And their teaching of the gospel and their proclaiming of the kingdom was going to cause what amongst the audience? What was going to be happening within families? Their message was going to divide families. So they needed to beware of these dangers as they went forth to the house of, to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So at this time that we talked about the death of John the Baptist, which had already happened, but as Jesus was performing miracles, what was the rumor, so to speak, as these miracles were happening? What were some people thinking? I'm sorry?
That he was John.
Yeah. That John had risen from the dead. And we took the time, as the gospel writers do, to then reflect upon the death of John the Baptist and how had he died. I'm not hearing that rule. Yeah, he was beheaded. The back story for that was what?
He had chastised Herod for having his brother's wife. And Herod had put him in prison, and Herodias was so angry that she wanted him dead. But Herod wouldn't do it. And so then when there was Herod had a birthday, and Herodias' daughter danced, and he made a promise to her and said, whatever you want. And she asked her mom, what do I want? And she said, you want John the Baptist's head on a platter.
And though the king was sorry, scriptures say, he did it anyway. And literally, he was unwilling to refuse Herodias' request. He would not, as it were, stand up and say no. Because what do we also know about Herod and John the Baptist? Did Did he actually have some respect for John the Baptist?
Yes.
He would call and listen for him. He would listen to him. But much like Pilate, though you know the right thing to do, he didn't have the courage to actually do it. And we've kind of answered this. Why did Herod think Jesus was John? Right, it was the miracles, and they were assuming that it was John who had come back from the dead. Number 22, upon their return from the mission that Jesus had sent them on, what did the disciples report to Jesus? Well, when they came back, and they said what?
They told him all that they had done.
Sorry?
They told him all they had done.
Right. They gathered with Jesus and reported him all that they had done and taught. They, in Luke chapter 9, it says they gave an account. There was an accounting of what they had done. Jesus gave them a mission. They accounted for what Jesus had charged them to do. Where did he now instruct them to go? After this accounting of what had done. So let's come away by ourselves for a little while. He again called them to himself, to a secluded place. Let's rest for a while. And Mark chapter 6 notes they went away in a boat to a secluded place by themselves. All right. We now get to... This briefly describe the feeding of the 5,000 and what led up to it. So they're, as we just mentioned, they're on the other side of the sea. And they come to him. First of all, what does Jesus say to Philip as the crowd is approaching?
Give them something to eat.
Well, he asked Philip, they're still coming. Basically, what do you think we're going to do? You know, how are we? We got this crowd coming towards us. How are we going to feed them? And once they were there, Jesus taught. And he taught them. And it's late in the day. And now the question that Jesus originally posed to Philip, what do you think we're going to do? And when Jesus said that, in John it records Jesus knew at that time what he was going to do. But finally it's late in the day, and he asked the apostles, what are we going to do? And their initial response was, we need to do what? We need to send them away so they can go buy their own food. And Jesus said what to them?
What do you have?
Well, yeah, before that, he said
flake.
You give them something to eat. And then they said, we don't have enough money. And Jesus then said, what do you have? And he told them, go look. And we made the point out they didn't know. But they went and found out what they had. And they came back and said, this is what we have, which was 5 loaves and 2 fish. And then what did Jesus do? I'm sorry? Okay, so have the people sit down. And then he thanked God, he praised God, and he blessed the food. And then what role did the apostles play? They were servants. They went to set the food before the people. And then when it was all said and done, the bottom line was what, Bruce?
There was more left than what they gave out.
There was more left than what they had given out. They picked up more than what they distributed. So So we talked about the role the apostles play, and in many respects, this miracle was to be a sign for those that ate the meal, but it was also a lesson taught to his disciples about the need to do what they could do, and to be servants, and to also learn the lesson of who Jesus was by what he was able to do by his power. Number 24, we already mentioned how many baskets of leftovers the disciples gathered. And this is another question. Why do you think there was such a great surplus?
I don't know. Why there was any surplus? Well, the reason there was a surplus was it was because Jesus performed a miracle.
That's why there was a surplus. Number 25, where did Jesus go after feeding the 5,000? First of all, where did he send and make the disciples go?
In the boat.
In the boat. And he compelled them to leave. What did he do with the multitude? He sent them away. Where did he go? Up to the mountain to pray. Number 26, what difficulty did the disciples experience while rowing their boat on the Sea of Galilee? Yeah, it was another storm. And what was it that caused great fear in them? Right. So while in the midst of the storm, they see someone walking to them on the water. Their presumption and their reaction was to say, it's a ghost. And then Jesus tells them to not be afraid. And then we talk about the fact that he introduced himself by saying what?
It is I.
It is I. Or, in essence, I am. He used that expression that identified him as more than just Jesus. He said, this is the Messiah, the Son of God, who comes to you. And then as we talked about, Peter then responded how? By saying, if it's you, Lord, command me to come to you on the water. And the one word that Jesus uttered was, come. And he came. And then we talked about earlier, once he took his eyes off Jesus, began looking at the wind and the waves around him. I thought it was interesting that someone pointed out that it says that he began to think. If Jesus wasn't there and a human being is on the surface of water, do you begin to think? All right, that was you, I think, that made that point. No, you're immediately, submerged into the water. We talked about the fact that Peter then, at that moment, had the word that was used indicated he was betwixt. He was not at the boat anymore, and the boat was behind him, Jesus was in front of him. He needed to turn to Jesus and focus on him, and Jesus reached out his hand and took him and saved him. And then they both went where? Into the boat, and immediately the storm was calm. And then finally, number 28, how did the people of the land of Gennesaret respond to Jesus? I'm sorry?
The rebels seemed to be healed, except one of the surrounding districts, and the rebels
seemed to be healed. Yes. So they converged on him, didn't they? And that's the segue then into the next portion of the context in John chapter 6, was the people there, and we'll have a map here in just a moment. Jesus has gone to the other side of the sea with his apostles. They take a note of the fact that Jesus isn't there, the one boat is gone, and they presume then he's left us, and they go seeking after him. And they literally run to try and catch him. And that's what leads us in next to John chapter 6. So let me switch over here. All right, so John chapter 6, let's read the context now where we're going to be setting. And if I can get someone to read John chapter 6, we're going to begin in verse 22. And let's read at this point through verse 34. We'll just start there. Luke 6, 22 through 34, if I can get someone to volunteer to read that.
John 6, 22-34. On the morrow, the multitude who stood on the other side of the sea saw that there was no other boat there save one, that Jesus entered not with his disciples into the boat, but that his disciples went away alone. Howbeit, there came boats from Tiberias nigh unto the place where they ate the bread after the Lord had given thanks. When the multitude therefore saw that Jesus was not there, neither his disciples, they themselves got into the boats and came to Capernaum seeking Jesus. And when they found him on the other side of the sea, they said unto him, Rabbi, when camest thou hither? Jesus answered them and said, Verily, verily, I say unto you, you seek me not because ye saw signs, but because ye ate of the loaves and were filled. Work not for the food which perisheth, but for the food which abideth unto eternal life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him the Father, even God, hath sealed. They said therefore unto him, What must we do that we may work the works of God? Jesus answered and said unto them, This is the work of God, that ye believe on him whom he hath sent. They said therefore unto him, What then doest thou for a sign, that we may see and believe thee? What workest thou? Our fathers ate the manna in the wilderness, as it is written. He gave them bread out of heaven to eat. Jesus therefore said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, it was not Moses that gave you the bread out of heaven, but my Father giveth you the true bread out of heaven. For the bread of God is that which cometh down out of heaven, and giveth life unto the world. They said therefore unto him, Lord, evermore, give us this bread.
All right. So much more to come. I wanted to begin with, as you study the Word of God, it's helpful to me to, as you approach a chapter, and I haven't done this a lot in this class, but to, in your mind, get an outline of what this chapter is about. So when we think about John chapter 6, what we've already studied, verses 1 through 13, you have the feeding of the 5,000. Verses 14 through 25 is where Jesus crossed the city other side of the Sea of Galilee and the crowd pursued him. So we've covered that part of that already, but we pick that part up here. Verses 26 through 34, why the multitude sought for Jesus. We find out what their purpose was in seeking after him. Verses 35 through 58, to me, this is Jesus in describing to the crowd who he is, that he describes him here as the bread of life, and we'll talk about that. Verses 59 through 66, the multitudes complained then about what Jesus had taught. And then verses 66 through 71, we read of Peter's confession, when Jesus asked the disciples if they're going to react the same way that the multitudes did. So I did that for myself. I didn't think it was a good practice to try and get the chapter kind of organized in my head anyway. So going back to the text, then in verse 22, it's interesting, chronologically now, set the table. It says the next day. The next day... after what? After he'd walked on the water and after he'd fed the 5,000 with the loaves and the fish. The very next day.
And the next day after the feed, or the so many folks that were sick were brought to him.
Right. All the healings that took place. So all of this has transpired and it's the next day. So we need to keep that in mind. After the feeding of the 5,000, after making disciples, his disciples, get into the boat to go to the other side, after he had sent the crowd away, after he left to go up into the mountain to pray, after he walked on the water to the apostles in the storm, then they came to the other side near Gennesaret. "You seek me," Jesus begins in verse 26. Jesus answered them and said, "Truly, truly, I say to you, you seek me." Are they looking for Jesus? Yes. You look at verse 24. "When the crowd saw that Jesus was not there, nor his disciples, they themselves got into the small boats and came to Capernaum seeking Jesus." We've already covered this. Is that a walk in the park, as it were, to get in a boat and cross that sea? That's work. That's a job. There's danger involved in that. The disciples knew about that. This is the second time that they had been on the sea in the storm. But this crowd doesn't think twice then about, let's get in the boats, let's go after him, let's find him. In verse 25, they found him. Okay. So, the crowd stood on the other side of the sea. They saw there was no other small boat there except one that Jesus had not entered with his disciples into the boat, but that his disciples had gone away alone. They saw that. Remember, Jesus sent them away. They watched the disciples go away without him. But they observed one boat and that the disciples got into it without Jesus. Further, they had not returned, nor was Jesus there with them. So, having desired to make... Remember, here's the other piece. Jesus knew they wanted to make me their earthly king. So Jesus knew that, and having that desire to make him their earthly king, are they going to take, as it were, no for an answer here? No, they're going to pursue after him. And they got into the boat. They proceeded from Tiberias to Capernaum to look for him. And when they found him, he said, "Rabbi, when did you get here? How long have you been away? When did you get here?" Not how did you get here. When did you get here? Did Jesus answer their question? That's not important. We talk about Tiberias to Capernaum. This is the direction that they would have gone from the southwest side of the sea up to the northern side of the sea. This is the direction that they would have gone. And Jesus' response to those who sought him, these people who wanted to make him their physical king, he knew why they sought him. He knew why they were coming after him. He knew why they wanted to make him king. And he said to them, "You're not coming after me because you saw the signs." Had they seen the signs? Yes. What did Jesus mean then when he said, "Not because you saw the signs"? Well, they had seen the signs. They had other reasons. It wasn't because they realized that this miraculous power meant that he was the Son of God. There were other reasons. Verse 14 notes, as we studied from John chapter 6, that when the people saw the sign which he had performed, they said, "This is truly the prophet who has come into the world." So they saw the sign, but they did not ascribe to the sign of reason that Jesus intended. They saw another purpose. Because you ate of the loaves and were filled, you're not following after me because you realize that only someone who is God can perform that miracle. You're coming after me because I fed you yesterday. And you had a meal that you didn't have to do anything for. It was given to you. And you realized that fact, and you came after me because you ate of the loaves and were filled, but it's the next day. Are they filled anymore? They're hungry again. I think that's partly why they asked him, "When did you get here?" we're looking for our next meal. Well, when did you get here? Jesus said, because you ate of the loaves and were filled. And now the day after, you want more. Are there those who follow Jesus not because he is the Son of God, not because he came to establish the kingdom, not because he came to give his life a ransom for many? They follow Jesus yet today for physical reasons, because there's something in it for them in this life, temporal nature. And are there people willing to offer that to people in the name of Christ? But they sought him not because of the sign, not because they were impressed by what he did and realized that it must be God who did that. They sought him for the food which perishes. We're looking for that temporal blessing that you gave to us yesterday. We're looking for the temporal needs of this life. They wanted to know if there was another free meal. What can you do for us today? What can you do for me now that will alleviate my physical needs? What indicates their desire that Jesus do this for them every day?
We brought to mind, we brought them to remembrance, but kind of like even I and Lisa talk about sometimes, if you took the fun, the frolic, and the food and the entertainment away, it makes you wonder how many cars would still be in the parking lot right about 40th East and Avenue J.
Yeah, and we've talked about this aspect of we just want to lure them in. We just got to get them in with the physical things, and then we'll teach them the spiritual truths. Does that ever work? No. But again, what in this context indicates that they're, in their mind, they're looking for this every day? Not only Jesus saying, you seek me because you ate of the loaves and were filled and now it's tomorrow, but what does verse 31 say? Our fathers ate the manna in the wilderness, as it is written, he gave them bread out of heaven to eat. When you think about the Israelites in the wilderness. And first of all, was it Moses who gave the manna to the Israelites? It was God. But what was the rule about the manna? What did God say about his provision of that bread?
It was for today.
It was for today. You were to take how much? Enough for today. And what happened if they took more than enough for today? But the promise was what? If you took just enough for today, what would happen tomorrow? There would be more tomorrow. To me in verse 31, when they say, our fathers ate the manna in the wilderness, as it is written, what are they looking for? We want that daily bread. We want that provision every day. We've come chasing after you. We're seeking you for today's provision. You fed us yesterday. Where's the bread of today? Question is, what they saw the miracles of healing, as Mickey mentioned. They saw the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000. They've seen the demons being cast out. What type of, we sometimes use the phrase, somebody is looking at life through rose-colored glasses, meaning they have a filter that lets them see the best of everything. What type of filter or glasses are they looking through at these miracles that Jesus is performing? Fleshly. They have a fleshly perspective. They're looking at things temporally. They're looking at things in the here and the now. You know, the glasses they have on are glasses that are carnal glasses. That's how they see everything, is in a fleshly perspective. And now they're looking for this meal. They fed us yesterday. We're looking for the free meal today. And Jesus' response to those who sought him, you seek me, not because you saw the sign, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled. Same signs, different conclusions. Why? Because they had different interests. They weren't looking for salvation. They weren't looking for the kingdom. Well, if they were looking for a kingdom, what type of kingdom were they looking for? An earthly kingdom in which their meals would be provided every day. When this is all said and done in John chapter 6, let's jump to the end. How does it all turn out? In terms of this multitude that has come to him, they all leave. Does Jesus go begging after them to stay? Is Jesus interested in having his kingdom filled with carnally minded people looking for the physical things of life? And when they said, we're not going to walk with you anymore, Jesus didn't beg, oh, please don't leave. But he simply, when we get there, he had some questions for his disciples who remained. His goal was not to include them. His goal was to change the audience that he preached to get them to see the spiritual side of the kingdom. Note that in verse 66, as they pointed out, he didn't try to bring them back. He wanted them to change, but if they were not going to change, was he interested in having them continue to follow him? And the question for us is, are we going to appeal to the same technique that Jesus rejected? That Jesus said, no, I'm not going to appeal to the physical side of man. I'm not going to try to appeal to their fleshly nature. I'm going to preach a spiritual message about a spiritual kingdom, about spiritual hope. But yet we see the temptation of mankind today to turn to these temporal lures to try and entice people to come in with the things of this life. What's the question then that they asked of Jesus in John chapter 6? Well, I apologize. I think I've got some slides out of order. But after he tells them, you seek me not because you saw the signs, but because you ate the loaves and were filled, his instructions to them was what? In verse 27, here's what I need you to do. Which is what?
Do not work for the food which perishes.
Don't work for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to eternal life. We'll pick up our... Did I miss the 5-minute warning?
Yes.
I wasn't even doing anything. Sorry about that.